Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasion.
Guys, I've been listening to y'all since this show aired.
Just wanted to tell Ty, I appreciate how much you know about the Razorbacks. I mean, you're very knowledgeable for as young as you are.
There are people that have saved up all year and done whatever it took just to get a ticket, just to get a glimpse at the Razorbacks.
Got my keg in the freezer. We're ready to get this thing rolling and go home, baby.
No, it's going to be not too much of a celebration to beat Arkansas. They haven't beaten anybody in a long time. We were supposed to win that football game on the Texas A&M.
So that was Ed Ogeron following the win over the Arkansas Razorbacks last year. And since then, a lot of things have turned in the opposite direction for the LSU Tigers. You lose numerous players to the NFL draft and to graduation. You lose Miles Brennan for the year. And then yesterday, breaking news from USA Today that LSU mishandled sexual misconduct complaints against students, including some of their top athletes. Darius Geis was listed, former LSU running back, Grant Delpit, and a lot of other big-time names for the football program. So, and this story, to call it a distraction would be a taking it lightly to what may or may not have occurred. And it is just right now LSU is dealing with numerous crap that Ed Orgeron is having to deal with, whether it's players opting out, just a variety of different things that's really tough on him as the head football coach. And you get Arkansas this week. They've been game planning for him as the Alabama game was canceled this past week. So they've had a little more time to game plan for Arkansas, but a lot on his plate right now as far as the head football coach of LSU is concerned. It is a Toyota Tuesday. Make sure you check out the full lineup of 2020 Toyotas, include what I drive to work every single day, the Toyota Camry, the Corolla, the Prius, the Avalon, or the spacious crossover RAV4 at your local Toyota dealer, Toyota. Let's go places. A lot of stuff going on with LSU, Tommy.
Well, and some of these allegations are, particularly with, I believe, with Geis, were some things that have been floating out there for a while. And I guess as these investigations continue to, and these things take time to manifest themselves and to come to conclusions, we're starting to see some reporting on these. This, LSU, whether it's basketball, whether it's football, there is just seemingly a lot of misconduct or wrongdoing around basketball, around football right now. There just seems to be a lot of swirling things around their athletic departments right now that seem to be a house of cards that could topple them at any moment. They've got an interim president. They've had transition within their athletic department. This seems like, depending on how things are handled, could set LSU back on several fronts. This, with the sexual allegations and this what's happening here, the basketball program with Will Wade, could set them back 3, 4, 5 years from being competitive at the top of this league. And I don't know that that should be the first concern, is how competitive you are, but that could be the result of whatever decisions are made, certainly.
The LSU Tigers have dealt with COVID as the Alabama game was canceled, and I think the Florida game was already canceled. They've had two already that have been, I say canceled, I keep saying postponed. Yeah. I've got to start saying postponed. Postponed.
But what's going to happen, as we've talked about, Alabama can't play two games. We know that LSU and Florida are scheduled to play the 12th. The Alabama game can't be played on the 19th because they're presumably in the SEC championship game, so What will the league do? I guess we'll find out in a couple of weeks, because Alabama can't play two in one day.
The email that we continuously get from the SEC's office is so-and-so needs to be reevaluated. That's what we continuously get when there's a game that they can't set and schedule at this point directly. That's what we keep getting. But, I mean, there's so many things you mentioned. I didn't even think about the LSU basketball program with what Will Wade's having to deal with. Mm-hmm. You think about losing your starting quarterback for the year in Miles Brennan. You think about all the guys you lost, including Jamar Chase opting out before the season began, their best, most talented offensive player, and probably the top wide receiver in college football. They've dealt with COVID stuff. Now, Ed Ogeron said in his press conference yesterday that they should be good to play against Arkansas as of today or as of tomorrow, depending on what the tests say. But there's just been a lot of things, and now this hits the fan with the USA Today report. And if you haven't read it, I encourage you to. It's a very extensive report on what has gone on allegedly there. It's just, I read it from start to finish yesterday, and I was just amazed at some of the intel and information that was packed inside that report.
Well, first of all, you feel sorry for the victims. That should be said first and foremost. It shouldn't have to be said, but just we want to be clear about that. And then it comes back to how the investigation should roll from the top with their administration. Who knew what and when did they know it? What did Coach Orgeron know? What did athletic administration know and when did they know it? And that's what you have to deal with. What did others on the campus who are in positions of authority know and when did they know it? And when you knew about it, what did you do about it? And from those decision points moving forward is probably how you should evaluate who gets to lead these programs moving forward.
Yeah, and then you think about what they're having to deal with this week, coming to Arkansas, coming to face a team that they crushed last season, and that you heard Ed Ogeron's comments at the top of the open. There was no celebration after beating Arkansas. We weren't planning on doing that. Well, I guarantee you that has been mentioned to every single player within the Arkansas locker room heading into this football game. On top of that, Sam Pittman should be back as of tomorrow. We'll talk about that coming up in a little bit. But there are a lot. This is kind of like you mentioned, either a house of cards or a snowball effect, where there is a lot of things heading for LSU's house. And you don't know if they're going to be able
maybe
to...
Maybe hurricanes more appropriate because of where they're located.
That's probably the
maybe
best...
Maybe a better analogy.
That's probably the best way to describe it, but it is just a lot of things. And again, I hesitate to call what the USA Today report is as a distraction because of the severity of it, but that's, I mean, just so many things that this football program, and really the athletic department as a whole right now, we've talked about how ADs are barely getting a wink of sleep. Well, Scott Woodward, who's the AD at LSU, is not sleeping a wink right now because of everything going on. He's having to deal with COVID stuff, financial stuff, the basketball allegations. I mean, there are so many different, it seems like every week something else drops for LSU. And it could be as little as an injury, and then it could be something that's an NCAA allegation, the sexual allegation, assault allegations. I mean, just another bit of information that if you're an LSU Tigers fan, you cannot be happy about.
So, a lot of these allegations occurred when Joe Oliva was AD, and then I noticed, I think his name was Steve Wolf, but I can't remember. There's an interim president that's in charge. I think he's one of the deans, and I don't have the name probably right, but point is they're in transition with campus administration, so the name's not really important. But I noticed there was a statement I saw on Twitter released, and it was semi-lengthy, but underneath it, I thought the important words beyond just, you know, those that were crafted by someone and that puts together statements for people in leadership was interim president, chancellor, you know, whatever it was there. That to me was important too, because it just tells you where LSU's at right now with their administration, with their leadership. Also tells you who wants to take on those jobs long term. I mean, as far as campus administration, we know Woodward's in charge of the athletic department, but it's tough times right now, you know, with whoever would step into those roles, knowing right from the jump, right from the get-go, these are the issues you're facing.
Yeah, and you mentioned something I think is important to come back to, is you don't know how much this could affect the, not just the football, basketball program, but if those are affected, that's going to affect everything else within the athletic department. Yep. So something to think about if you're at any point going to take a job for LSU, which most of you listening would not even consider that.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house wearing number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs!
So the NCAA came out yesterday and said they are in preliminary talks to play the entire, not just the first and second round, Sweet 16, Elite Eight, but the entire NCAA tournament in Indianapolis, Indiana, which is where the NCAA headquarters are located and is really the mecca of a lot of basketball traditions. Now, the Final Four was already scheduled to be played in Lucas Oil, so this would just be adding, I don't know off the top of my head, but all those other games combined. But I thought this was cool yesterday, and we will definitely unpack this coming up here on the Morning Rush.
Now let's talk about the logistics on that. We're brought to you by United Welding Institute. They're training high-quality welders at United Welding Institute that are getting paid big bucks right now. In fact, averaging $2,800 a week with their students that they're shaping into welders that go into great jobs in the oil field, power plants, refineries, pipelines, and more. So if the job you're in is a dead-end job, it's a job, not a career, you might want to listen up, because United Welding Institute in Pottsville has been training field-tested welders since 2013. Change your life by calling 968-3390. That's 479-968-3390, or read more at unitedweldinginstitute.com. You can seize the opportunity today to take the next step forward to a successful and essential career. And did I mention? I did earlier. Listen again. $2,800 a week is what their graduates are making. So if you're ready to change your life, your family's life, and take a new career path, call United Welding Institute, 479-968-3390, or again, visit UnitedWeldingInstitute.com. That's UnitedWeldingInstitute.com.
So Dan Gavitt, who's the NCAA Senior Vice President of Basketball, said it became clear it's not feasible to manage this complex championship in so many different states with the challenges presented by the pandemic. Now, we saw the success of the National Basketball Association and their bubble, the regular season, the tail end of that, and then what led up to the finals of that. A lot of success stories came out of that. Now, if you remember, Orlando, ESPN, college basketball programs had a little spat with some of the tournaments that they had planned to play in Orlando, and so that's not occurring. So it doesn't look like that they'll be able to play this in Orlando, even though the Disney Wide World of Sports would have the complex necessary for it. So Indianapolis, what's what they're looking like? I'm assuming that's going to be Hinkle Fieldhouse, Butler's Lucas Oil. I mean, there's a number of different places surrounding. That's just my assumption.
First of all, this is close to their headquarters, mm-hmm. which I assume that's a big plus for them. And who wouldn't that be for when you're trying to plan logistics and cut costs and all of these things right now? You can keep more of your staff closer to home and curb costs that way. Number two, the facilities at Disney, A, come with the added cost of housing and staffing and all your people, but they don't hold a lot of attendees.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows where we're going to be by March, April, or even May, and we'll get to that point because there's one high-profile coach, and I think there will be others that get on board that want to push this thing back. Hey, the NCAA wants to sell tickets in addition to the television revenue. They'd settle for the TV revenue right now, knowing they could get it, but they'd like to be able to sell tickets. The Disney properties don't really set up to sell a great number of tickets compared to what they're used to. At least you could, because what do they have? 8 regional sites to open up the tournament that they have their pods, and then they narrow it down to the 4 locations for the second weekend for the Sweet 16 and the Elite 8, and then, of course, one Final Four location. There are 8 facilities in the state of Indiana. I think we could probably sit here without a lot of research and come up with that could host 10, 12, 15,000 fans for ball games. And if you had to, you could rework it to make that happen. I mean, there's just enough, you know, basketball facilities in that state to make that happen. I mean, you just think about Notre Dame, you think about Indiana, you think about Lucas Oil. I mean, there's 3 without, you know, even Southern Indiana.
Hinkle Fieldhouse.
Hinkle, there's 5, and we haven't even stretched ourselves. We didn't even hit Google yet, and we've named 5. So I think that's another part of it that they're not going to come right out and mention. But, hey, if the vaccine is really on track and is going to work and the public's willing to accept it, we could maybe sell some tickets. Because the unknown is, what's public sentiment going to be by April, by March, by perhaps May, if this thing gets pushed back? You don't want to give up ticket revenue, and you're not going to have that if you play it in the Disney Wide World of Sports.
And you mentioned a high-profile coach, that high-profile coach being Rick Pitino, mm-hmm. former coach of Louisville, now at Iona, and he's wanting the May Madness scenario. And like you mentioned, this is such a fluid situation. We don't know where we're going to be as a country come March, April, May, and maybe that
it may be zero fans, or it could be a full house. Yeah. We don't know.
Yeah, that's
my guess is somewhere in between.
Based on this year, that seems like a lifetime away.
Right.
I think it's one of those things. Well, they're just going to have to continuously decide. But it being basically headquartered in Indianapolis as far as the NCAA, and again, it's preliminary talks. It has not been concreted in, nailed down by any stretch of the imagination. But that got me thinking, where would I want to go as a Division I college basketball player to play an NCAA tournament? Let's throw, let's say COVID is non-existent and you just have one place that you and a bunch of other college basketball teams and buddies are going down to play weeks upon weeks of college basketball. Where would you want to go? Now, to me, you mentioned, you've talked about before the show that Indiana is like mecca of a lot of basketball. You think about Hoosiers. You think about a lot of different big-time players that have come out of that state. I think Boston would be a cool. I like the historic significance of that city surrounding basketball. You think about the old Boston Garden, now TD Ameritrade Garden. To me, Boston would be just kind of a cool place. I think, I mean, close to here, this isn't as prestigious. Kansas City puts on a great Big 12 tournament. Right. If you have not been and you're in the Kansas area or near it, that is a sight you have to see. Obviously, I'm a little biased when it comes to Nashville going to the SEC tournament. Love doing that. I think Louisville would be a cool place. Charlotte. Those are just kind of some of the destinations I've like listed out. And this is under the impression of COVID not being a thing.
Right, but you know, if COVID wasn't a thing, then you just played nationally like you do, which is kind of like a World Cup of basketball. I mean, it's that's why it's March Madness. You just play it nationally like you have always done. But now you want to take a national event and compress it into inside a state's borders. Well, who has enough facilities? And with the NCAA's home office being in Indiana, that's what makes sense. So I think that's, you just look at, could we pull it off inside one state? There's probably not many states that could do it. Indiana's, you know, one that could do it. So while it wouldn't be my preference, I see why it makes sense.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
They just threw him out of the game. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
Breaking news coming out of Sam Pittman's press conference yesterday. Unfortunately for Devion Warren, he will no longer be playing football in 2020. Out with the season with an ACL tear. Very disappointed as he's had one of his better seasons to date. 15 catches, 278 yards, 3 touchdowns. Has been a dynamic playmaker for the Arkansas offense at times. And really a bummer based on the way he's played. I know he has to be severely disappointed.
It just makes you sick. I mean, just at least there's plenty of time to rehab and get ready for next year. And you think about the timing of that. I guess there's plenty of time. Shouldn't be any reason he couldn't be back, but he's going to miss spring. I mean, with a tear, right? There's no reason to believe he'll participate in spring.
Recovery is about 6 to 9 months,
right?
You
just think about that. It's going to be pushing it to be completely ready, and particularly for contact at the beginning of fall next year. So I would imagine that's going to be right on that border, but I would expect to see him ready to go at the beginning of next year. But just makes you sick that these guys can't get through the year the way this you know, with everything else they've had to battle to get through, and then to have an injury like that that takes the last third. I mean, you think, well, it's only 3 games left. Well, that's a third of your year right now.
He is a senior, but he has the ability to come back, and he made the joke earlier this year. It's like, well, if Coach wants me back, I'm coming back. So hopefully Devion Warren will come back, depending on what he's thinking about with rehabbing his injury and all that thinking that has to go into this process.
Sam has talked about, you know, one of his first jobs when this season's over, and I'm sure he's already began the process, is re-recruiting some of the seniors that are on this team. And I'll be interested to see. Another one is Felipe Franks. Now, he's played pretty well as of late. It will be interesting to see whether he wants to test the waters of the NFL draft, which I would imagine the way he's played the last few weeks, he's a late rounder and certainly a free agent guy. You know, is that the route he wants to go? Or is another year here, more intriguing to him? That will be interesting to see where his mind is at in a few weeks. I would be surprised at this point if he came back for another year, but he is the reason why you are a 3-win team at this point.
You're kind of flipping the script a little bit. I think 2 weeks ago you were like, you think he's going to come back.
Well, he's played better. I mean, I didn't think with the way he played a few weeks ago there was really I didn't think it would be the right move a few weeks ago. He's made some throws, and his game has moved to a level that I think that I'll be surprised now if he does. I still think it's not a slam dunk 100% deal. Mm-hmm. I'm more like 60-40, 65-35. I still think another year would benefit him, But I think when guys see something just north of 50%, they go because they see the money.
He needs help from his offensive line. And again, it's wide receivers, and Devion's injury doesn't help him in that regard.
But I think another year here with a better offensive line, he could make a lot more money with another year here. But is he's seen an injury once. He knows what the risk of another year is to injury here with another season. And I'll be surprised because of those factors that he comes back. But I think he would be a benefactor of another year under this offense with an improved offensive line. He would make a lot more money with another season at Arkansas.
With Devion's injury, Sam Pittman listed a couple guys that he expects to step up. Tyson Morris, Darren Turner, a young freshman out of Memphis, nicknamed Megatron, and then Trey Knox. Now, Trey Knox posted yesterday, says it's time to step up. Well, if I'm Trey Knox, I'm looking at
this week, man.
As an all you can eat. I mean, this LSU secondary, Stingley Jr. is not guarding you. Like, he's not matching up on you.
Nope.
So you don't have to worry about that. He's going to either be on Burks or Woods. This should be a field day for Trey Knox this week. You're 6'5", over 200 pounds. You got to get off blocks, get off presses. And to me, I'm looking at this week, if I'm Trey Knox, as a wonderful opportunity to take advantage of. Now, again, he wasn't rooting for Devion to get injured and for this opportunity to pop up. But since it has, man, you got to go take advantage of it.
Yeah, I mean, it opens up targets, right? I mean, so that you got to get yourself open, catch the... But haven't we been saying this? Rewind the tape. We've been saying these same things about Knox for, 7 weeks now? So, I mean, it's been rather disappointing, the kind of year he's had. And it's, I don't think it's necessarily a deal where he's lived in the shadows of Burks and Woods and Warren to the point he just can't get targets. I mean, he just can't get himself open. So is it a point where his OC and his QB has lost confidence and just looking his way? I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if you could actually get an honest answer to what's really going on with this deal.
Was it the Auburn game that he dropped that two-point conversion?
Backline two-point conversion, had it in his hands and just dropped it.
Well, I think back to the...
I mean, it was wet, a nasty day, but that's a difference-making play.
I look back to the Missouri game in Little Rock last year where Jack Lindsey underthrows a ball and Trey just went up and gets it. To me, he doesn't necessarily have to be open in the red zone. He's 6'5". Just throw him the ball. Like, and I get it. You want him to be open. You don't want the cornerback to be up in him. But he has a matchup in his favor every single time he walks on the field. So in the red zone, that's where you need to target. If you want to do Burks and Woods on the deep routes all day long, nothing wrong with that. We've seen the success there. But Trey doesn't necessarily, he doesn't have to get targets like in the middle of the field. You just got to throw him the ball in the red zone. It's not that complicated. Just throw him a jump ball. It's not that hard.
Doesn't seem like Arkansas doesn't seem to throw a lot of slants, but seems like he would be a guy that could take a slant. But he doesn't, I mean, I don't know. Arkansas doesn't seem to have the guys that want to run the slants a lot. Maybe Arkansas doesn't want to throw the slant a lot. Maybe they find it dangerous. I know it gets thrown on Arkansas a lot, but you know, he would be the kind of target with that body, is all I'm saying, that you know, could go at that second level of the defense and maybe grab you 7 or 8 yards at least.
I mean, just throw him a fade. It's not that complicated.
I agree.
And I don't get
it. I'm not a fan of red zone fades, but I hear you.
He's going to be singled up because they haven't respected him to this point. The SEC cornerbacks, the SEC defensive coordinators, why not take a chance and opportunity this
week? But why respect him? Because, you said they hadn't respected him to this point, but tell me why to respect him.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, he's not going to get the respect.
Right.
So why not throw him the football? He's not going to get doubled. They're going to be their mind bait. Woods just went over 100 yards again. Burks has been one of the best wide receivers in the SEC. The concentration of the defensive coordinators in the secondary is going to be on those two guys. It's not going to be on Knox.
And Woods went for 129, is what? Two catches. That's great, but you really need, you know, 130 yards on more than two catches. I know that sounds wrong and backwards. You're glad it was two touchdown grabs, but, you know, we were talking about clock control, ball control offense. That's great that you had two explosive plays. You'd take that over nothing, but, you know, that's not really how you want to do it. Up and down. You want to go up and down the field and be more in control than that.
We'll see if Trey gets some – balls thrown to him this week. I hope he does. He's my I've mentioned several times he's my favorite wide receiver.
You just got one less option now with Warren out. And a speed straight. And how does that affect special teams too? Because what are you going to I mean, do you really want to put Burks back there? I don't. So what are you going to do? So
you think they switch it out all of a sudden mid season? It's not even mid season. It's three quarters of the way through the season.
So I don't know. Because he's been involved some in special teams, Devian Warren. So
Burks has been returning punts, and then you've had Nathan Perotti and Warren returning kicks.
Right.
So that's a Scott Fountain question. So, which we don't get to talk to coordinators as far as that goes. All right, other injury news. Hudson Henry was practicing as of yesterday. Sam Pittman said, we'll see on Saturday. He says Blake Kern and Jiofu Shea should be fine. He said he didn't know about Bo Limmer or Noah Gatlin, two offensive linemen, as far as their game time decisions as of this Saturday. And Devin Bush, we finally got some news on this. Devin Bush has been out for the season with a shoulder injury that's kept him off the field. So we've been wondering about the former Louisiana secondary player, and he is finally, we finally got some intel on that as far as that goes. Sam Pittman also told us he made an 18 on his ACT. An 18 on his ACT, which I found funny. He was making fun of my dad still won't tell me.
I didn't do well on the ACT.
My dad still won't tell me the score of his, which ticks me off.
Yeah.
He said, once youngest sister, she's a senior in college, graduates, he'd finally tell us. But the ACT doesn't mean jack you know what. It is. It's.
I wouldn't go there. I don't know too many people that made 34s, 5s, and 6s that didn't do well in
life. Just said you didn't make a good score.
And I'm sitting here with you, too. I don't know too many people that made mid-30s in the 30s that haven't turned out.
Talking about on the other side. If you get a low score,
the people that say this, the people that make these statements are like me and you.
Yeah, I got 20.
Exactly.
I got 23.
Exactly. I didn't even do that good. So the people that made 35s, 34s, I know some people that I went to school made 30 in perfect scores. They're never the ones that say, that score doesn't mean nothing. You ever met anyone that made a 30-something that said, hey, it doesn't mean anything? You'll never meet anyone that made a 30-something on their ACT and said, it doesn't mean a thing, as they're on their way to Vanderbilt or Stanford.
I'm just talking about
picking Ivy League school.
From our vantage point, that if you have a lower score, has it really affected Sam Pittman that he got an 18 on his ACT? No. He's the head football coach at the University of Arkansas.
Yeah, but look how long it took him to be I bet that's what
that's
held him back.
That's the sole reason?
That's the reason. It held him back all these years.
Last quick hitting headline for you. Arkansas will play Missouri at 11 a.m. on the SEC Network. That was announced yesterday. So you got back-to-back 11 a.m.s for the Arkansas Razorback football team.
All right, quick hitting headlines brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings and the new sauces that are at B-Dubs. You can check out the pizza sauce. If you want pizza or wings, have them both together right now with the new pizza sauce. Lemon pepper's always been a favorite. You can try it out. The new orange sauce, it comes with a fortune cookie. And Ty's favorite, the Carolina Reaper. Ask Phil Elson about the Carolina Reaper. It lit him up. It's the new captain of the sauces. It's the blazing sauce. You can find Buffalo Wild Wings in Fort Smith, Little Rock, Sherwood, Jonesboro, and in Conway.
Biggest news of the day is probably either the Indianapolis stuff with the NCAA tournament potentially being the entire field of 68 hosted there, or the stuff breaking out of USA Today with LSU. Now, if you are just hearing this for the first time, USA Today reported that LSU mishandled sexual misconduct complaints against students, including top athletes. Now, probably the most notable of those top athletes is former LSU running back Darius Geis. Grant Delpit was also listed in this report. If this holds true, and I try my best when we touch on these subjects to not make light of the situation. I mean, it's just a disaster for LSU in terms of their compliance, the student athletes on campus that may or may not have done this. I mean, this is just a bad look for an athletic department that has seemingly been in turmoil the last couple years outside of that lone national championship.
Start getting Title IX complaints. I mean, it just starts snowballing on you. And I mentioned earlier they've got university level administration in transition, you know, fairly new AD still on the job. It comes back to, for a long time investigative reporting, you know, you start asking the questions, who knew what and when did they know? And that's where you kind of go with these things. So USA Today digging in their heels on the reporting. And, you know, these are the kind of things that even under the circumstance of a national title a year ago, Ed Orgeron very well could not survive something of this nature. We know that the basketball program has been having issues under Will Wade and the investigation with shoe companies and money possibly given to players and that investigation that's been ongoing. So there's just a lot of things swirling around LSU's athletic department, now their campus. You know, they say that the old adage is the wind blows strongest at the mountaintop. LSU's had a lot of success in recent months, in the recent year. And right now, it seems like this house of cards may be blowing over.
We'll come back to this conversation when Clay Henry joins us, the publisher of Hogs Illustrated, in about 15 minutes. But first, I want to welcome in David, who's in South Arkansas, to the Morning Rush. David, what's going on this morning?
Good morning, gentlemen. Just going to be a great weekend. Two of the greatest hate games ever, LSU and the Raiders this weekend. But a question, and then I'll get off. Y'all were talking about players coming back, opting out. Could you please give like a rundown of the guidelines? How do you use up eligibility? How is eligibility retained for next year? If a player opts out, can they come back? Just all that stuff that goes into it, because when do you use up eligibility if players can come back? How that would affect, of course, recruiting, incomers, and all that. I know it's a big mess, but if you could hopefully straighten it out a little bit, thank you very much.
Absolutely, David. So there's been kind of a blanket statement over all NCAA Division I fall athletes that you get an extra year of eligibility on the condition of if the school wants you back.
Right.
Like you can still retain that scholarship next year, but some schools might be like, hey, you probably need to go somewhere else if you want to earn a scholarship somewhere.
So the school still has to fund the scholarship.
Correct.
You know, you don't live under the assumption that the scholarship is free. Now, I've always kind of thought, well, I mean, it's really money moving from the left pocket to the right pocket, right? From the athletic department funds to the university funds. But it's still money. The athletic department at Arkansas, who operates autonomous and self-supporting, still has to find the money to write the check to fund the scholarships to pay the university. It's the second biggest expenditure, as I understand it, for the athletic department is the scholarships, like $11 to $12 million a year they spend on that. I think debt service is one around, I believe it's $16 million, and then scholarships are around $11, $12 million. So these aren't free. Now, yes, it's like moving money from your savings account to your checking account in some ways, but it's still athletics to the university. So, do you want to go that expenditure on an athlete that, you know, he's a senior, but he played in a handful of plays this year? Do you want him back just because he wants to come back and live up another year of getting his master's degree finished up? School may not extend that. Player like a Felipe Franks or Rakeem Boyd, you probably welcome him back with open arms.
No, exactly right.
So is that double scholarship.
Yeah, double scholarship. I was at the gym yesterday, and I found this pretty funny. I was talking to Gary and Fort Smith, who is a listener of the program. We tend to work out at the same time, and he came up to me, and we were just talking about the LSU game this weekend, various things that occurred in the Florida game. And one of the things that stood out to me is he said something similar to what you said on Saturday night. He's like, don't you think Dan Mullen's just such a prick? And I'm sitting here laughing because I remembered something you said on social media, the exact same rhetoric come Saturday night. So that got me thinking, if I had to rank the biggest prick head coaches in the SEC, now we're going to take Will
Muschamp. We've used that word enough.
We'll take Will
Muschamp. Jerk head coach.
Jerk head coaches. We'll take Will Muschamp's name out of it to this point since he's no longer the head coach at South Carolina.
Yeah, so I'd leave it in there.
There's 13. Okay, if you want to leave it here on their side. There's 13 head coaches. Here's the list I came up with as far as the rankings goes. I had Nick Saban as the biggest jerk at number one, Kiffin at two, Malzahn at three, Mullen at four, Jimbo at five, Eli Drinkwitz at six because he's just kept chirping in the offseason, Kirby Smart at seven, Muschamp at eight, Pruitt at nine, Mike Leach at 10, Coach O at 11, Mark Stoops at 12, Derek Mason at 13, and Sam Pittman at 14. I think if you asked any SEC fan base, Sam Pittman would be at the bottom of the list, which would be a good thing because you don't want him to be known as the biggest jerk or anything. What would you change about that ranking? Send to our listeners at 877-377-6963. Who do you think are the top three jerks head coaches in the SEC?
why do you think Nick Saban's the biggest jerk in the league? Because he wins the most?
I think it's a combination of him going off on reporters, him seemingly just coming off as, I mean, I can't say what you said, I couldn't say, but like...
Well, we said we used our allotment
this morning, but he just comes off as a DB, there's a variety of different adjectives that are not fit for air to describe Nick Saban. He's a tremendous football coach, maybe the best ever in college football. But when it comes to his demeanor, how he treats players, his staff, I mean, his own staff would probably say he's the biggest DB mm-hmm. that they've ever worked around. I think that's pretty, if you ask them.
Well, I think he's a hard butt. There's no question about that. He's demanding.
I mean,
you know exactly where, but I think you've got a head coach in your basketball program that carries a lot of those same characteristics. A coach that we had at Arkansas a decade ago that we all hold in high esteem had a lot of these same characteristics. You just don't talk about that because, well, he was your guy. But I think Musselman runs his program a lot like Saban and Petrino ran their programs, where it's very demanding. You know exactly where you stand as a player and as assistant coach constantly. And, if you don't bring it every day, you're going to get called out. And I think that's exactly how Nick Saban runs it. You know exactly as a player, an assistant, an analyst, an equipment manager, the water girl, water boy, whatever, bus driver, you know exactly where you stand. That's how Petrino did it. That's how Saban does it. I think that's how Musselman does it. He keeps everybody uncomfortable, Nick Saban does, and that's part of his magic to demand the best out of you.
How many texted Eric Musselman last year? You remember?
It wasn't very many. I don't know the answer to that.
I want to say it was like one of the tops in the SEC. That's why. But, I mean, to your point, it's like you're not going to say that by your own guy. But, I mean, I think when you asked other SEC basketball fan bases about that, he's not Cal level, but he's probably top five. Mm-hmm.
I don't see a lot of whining and complaining. I mean, you get a little bit out of Saban because he doesn't like some of the treatment that you get around the draft, and he doesn't like some of the rules, and he's been around long enough. You've had more opportunity to hear things that he said. So I think Saban's going to be in anyone's top two or three. I don't know that he's the worst because I think he can back up a lot of what he has to say.
So what's yours?
I think Muschamp's way up there for me, and Dan Mullen's way up there for me because Mullen has proven a lot to me the last few years. I thought a lot of times he chirped a lot without backing up a lot, and I don't know if that necessarily falls into being one of the biggest jerks. I didn't like the fact that they kept – listen, it's Arkansas's job to stop the opponent. It's not their job to quit throwing and quit playing. But, listen, when you're up, what was it at that point, 56 to 20, whatever it was – at that point, you don't have to keep throwing the football into the end zone, particularly to score your 62nd and then 63rd point. But
turn into my generation.
But I understand it's Arkansas's job to stop you, not your job to stop you in a ball game like that. But it just seemed like he was going out of his way to make a point in that game Saturday and step on your throat with maybe what was the old Georgia saying, with a hobnail boot. And that part I didn't appreciate a little bit, and it kind of soured me a little bit on Dan Mullen.
Josh and Fort Smith text in again. You can text in 877-377-6963. Who's the least likable head football coach in the SEC? He said Dan Mullen is the biggest crybaby, but maybe not the biggest jerk.
And I know Muschamp is gone. We obviously know that. He was at Florida. He was at South Carolina till 48 hours ago or whatever. But all he does during ball games is complain. And I think you could see the pot boiling over right before halftime. Is all he wanted to do was yell at referees and really not focused as much on the game as he was on officiating. And it turned out to be the next half was his last half at South Carolina. So, and he was upset about something that happened a few plays prior. And then they came back and reset the clock to 1 second, which allowed Ole Miss to kick a field goal, and he was just going bananas over that.
So who's your top three? You said Mullen.
I'd put Mullen. I'd put I know Muschamp's out now. Probably Jimbo in there. No, I'm not a big Jimbo guy. I just think he's a sleaze bag.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. a bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time we're coming for the whole damn thing.
We're going to be a mini celebration for being Arkansas. It hadn't been one in a long time.
That's what the Talking Rock said about your football program last year.
I'd give that about a four.
Four?
That's about a four. You're not as good at impressions as Ruskin. He's a little better.
You got to have the country drawl in it.
Yeah. That you sounded more...
Let's get y'all's Ed Ogeron impression real quick. Go ahead.
I don't know. I can talk like a rock.
Give me one second. Hang on. I got to cue...
If y'all are going to critique, you got to come back. Let's go.
We're going to celebrate beating Arkansas. They ain't won anything in a while.
All right.
I can't top that. That was good, though.
I'd say that was pretty solid. Clay,
that was a solid eight.
You want to give her the old college try?
That's better than his, right?
No, I don't have any.
You get down low.
Listen, you're critical. Let's hear it. He did a good one.
Commercial. You
Let's hear
down
it.
Low.
Yeah.
Allstate, rather. Allstate.
See, part of me... Oh hell, shut up! But part of it has to sound like the redneck off of the Water Boy.
Yeah, but
I do the Bobby.
Yeah.
The defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
What's it? Yeah. What's all right? Let's see it.
That was it.
That was it.
Okay.
That was attempt. Tommy, I think you won that. So that is what he said about your football program this past season. Let me tell you something. That is motivation in itself to beat the dog out of them come Saturday.
Right. Can I have one more try? We try it one more time.
One more time?
All right.
There was going to be nothing too much of a celebration to beat Arkansas. They haven't beaten anybody in a long time. We were supposed to win that football game on the Texas A&M.
That was perfect. You sounded exactly like him. Your voice okay? Golly, that was almost identical.
That sound good?
Cow, that was perfect.
All right,
absolutely perfect. It is a Toyota Tuesday. We're off and running this morning. Be sure to check out the full lineup of 2020 Toyotas, including the Camry, the Corolla, the Prius, the Avalon, or the spacious crossover RAV4 at your local Toyota dealer. Toyota, let's go places. Let's go to the phone lines and welcome in PA and Texarkana. PA, you are on the Morning Rush, man.
Good morning, gentlemen. I was going to make this quick. The first guy that called in, he took my choice. So I guess I'm going to have to add to it or change mine.
He said Trey Flowers. Is that who you wanted, Flowers or Ragnow?
Flowers.
You want Flowers?
Flowers, no doubt. But I'm going to add, since he took Flowers, I'm going to add Darius Fowler onto that, put him on the other side, or maybe in the middle, let Marshall go around the end, bull rush around the end. And then the other person, he gave somebody on offense. Mm-hmm. I'd love to have Jason Peters back as a dual tight end and a guy who could steal the corner.
Mm-hmm.
So, hello?
Yep, no,
that's two good ones, PA.
That was my guy. That's who I picked.
I said Sean Andrews. And
so you and I are on the same page. Yeah. Let him play a little tight end. Let him play a little tackle, right? Yeah.
So that's Clay. I'll just kind of let you go off that. Why Jason Peters? Because that's definitely a guy that could be a force on the offensive line.
Well, first of all, he's going to be in Canton. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. And I guess he has been at times the highest paid left tackle in the NFL. And, they line him up beside Sean Andrews and they block that side of the defensive line got crushed week after week. And that was, a lot of fun to watch. And he was a dominant SEC lineman, even as a tight end. And they threw the ball to him a couple of times, I think, but basically he was an extra tackle out there. And I mean, it was an earthquake when those two guys moved down the field. And, you'd like to get them both back and play them just like that. But I think you could put Jason Peters at right tackle on this team and it would make a major difference.
So,
and Dalton Wagner and Noah Gatland are trying hard, but they're not the beast that Jason Peters is.
So if you had Peters on one side, you could on what? Anything third and two, fourth and one, anything short yardage, you're going to run it right behind them, and there's really nothing most teams can do about it, right? I mean,
That's right.
What are you going to do?
And I've been pleased with what's happened with Latham and Cunningham on the left side. They have... you know, that's where they're making their big plays in the running game with those guys. And it started a little bit in the Auburn game, and Clary and Latham both made plays at guard in that game. And I've seen it continue, and they're able to make cutback blocks over to the left side. And the Traylon Smith run was through left guard, and then Blake Kern came through the hole and he cut back off of Kern's block. And so they've done some things that I think are promising, but they still need a little more help at right tackle. And right tackle with a right-hand quarterback is an important position. Yeah, it really is.
You put Kern, because that's who you'd have, next to Jason Peters. And you're just going to road grade some people right now. You'd want Kern instead of – I mean, Kern's 20 pounds heavier than Hudson Henry, so I think that's
who
you want.
Clarksville boy, isn't it?
Lamar.
Lamar.
Well, they have Clarksville roots, but Lamar is where he played. You know, he was a quarterback in high school.
Oh.
Played quarterback.
He's just the best player on the team.
Can you imagine in high school trying to tackle Blake Kern? Oh, the pain, the misery.
Well, he was about 40 pounds lighter then. So, okay. But he still would have been the biggest guy on the field.
270 now is what
putting on some good weight. All right, so we've talked, y'all. We've talked. You said Jason Peters. Carl Novacka said Trey Flowers was one of his guys. That's the first name that came to mention. I'm going to treat this like a draft and not pick someone that you picked. Who are you going to go with?
Well, he said Peters, so I just said Sean Andrews would be different. I would take Peters if given
either one of those guys.
Either one would be great because they're two of the best linemen you've had in a quarter century and maybe a half century. I don't know. Clay, you're more the historian, but
they're the two best all time Arkansas.
Exactly. I mean, I think of them and, you struggle to put names ahead of them ever in the history of the program. And that's not really fair because you go back to the 60s. The body types are so much different. I mean,
Ragnall's in the discussion too, but I mean, what Peters has done in the NFL separates himself. Right. Like I said, he's going to be a Hall of Famer.
But you can't really go back. I mean, I think about my good friend, the late Gerald Skinner, who was one of the first big men. He came out of Malvern to play. I mean, you really go back before then and Lyman played in the low 200s, 220, 230, 240. You know, it's just a different game today. They're 100, mm-hmm. they're 75 or 100 pounds heavier today than they were 40, 50 years ago. So it's hard to compare Lyman from the 60s and 70s to Lyman of today in the last 20 years.
So. Here would be my two that I haven't seen anyone mention yet. Both Little Rock guys, Jonathan Leagues and Jamal Anderson. If I had to pick one on either side of the football, I mean, that Leagues is a – I know he won the Remington Award once. Clay, did he win it twice? Or did he just
he won it once, but
– golly.
Coffee went down the wrong pipe. Yeah, but let me just put some definition on what we're doing here. The picks that you're making – will they help the team the most? And so what I'm saying is Stromberg's actually playing pretty dang good.
Right.
How much of a bump in player you're going to get from putting Jonathan in there instead of Stromberg, I don't think it's going to be a huge bump. I mean, he's a good player, but I think Ricky Stromberg's a good player. So I don't think they're getting whipped at center.
So,
and where you want to help this team is you want to take an all-time great and replace a player that's just, middle of the road.
So if that was the case, we'd just all take McFadden. McFadden on this team because we got two good running backs.
But Boyd and Smith are decent SEC players to good SEC players. Right. They're two of the better players on the team.
So if I said Tony Hugo, is that a better answer, Clay?
But Hugo is not in the same. Yeah, that's a better deal. But you can't take if you can't do Andrews or Peters. I see what you're doing.
Yeah,
and Ragnall's off the board. You can't take him.
So what are the deficiencies on this team? Is what that's the point of this exercise is where can you plug holes on this team? And I immediately went to offensive line because Clay's trained me that way. So.
Yeah, and then you could also, don't forget about Brandon Burlesworth. He's an All-American.
Well, hey.
So that's another one. But I think we're thinking along the same lines is that working this team, where is there room to grow? Mm-hmm. It's in the offensive line.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And they have grown, and they're getting better, and they're going to continue. And these guys that they're playing with now will develop as they continue to get bigger and stronger. They're going to develop into – I think Brady Latham is going to be a great player. I mean, nobody's talking about him, but he's got a nasty streak, and he's got the frame to take about another 30 pounds. I think you're really going to like what you get from Brady Latham over the next 2 years.
Craig agrees with your Brandon Burlesworth take. Mike from Van Buren says Jason Peters. We got a couple McFaddens that have been added.
We had one earlier, and this is different, but it would probably make the difference in a ball game for Zach Hocker. Because we know special teams has been a problem. We know that some extra points and chasing 2 points the rest of the day at Auburn was an issue. Could you get on board with some Zach Hocker?
That's okay. Yeah, I'm not against that.
I mean, there's been problems with field goals and at least at Auburn, extra points. You could make a difference in special teams, that's for sure.
I think that would be a good one as well. Yeah, we've done a bunch of Hawker
ones. I had a text earlier about a half hour ago on that.
So we appreciate your text this morning talking about players that you would like to add to this year's team. But you do have some players on this year's team that you're excited about. And we'll kind of segue this into kind of the injury conversation. Sam Pittman talked with us yesterday about who's playing and who's not. Unfortunately for Arkansas Razorbacks and the young man himself, Devion Warren is out for the season with an ACL tear. He's had almost 300 receiving yards, 3 touchdowns this season. Has been a dynamite playmaker for them at times, really performed in the Auburn game. Hudson Henry is practicing as of yesterday. Sam Pittman said he's a wait and see until Saturday. Blake Kern, Joe Fouché, they should be fine. Bo Limmer, Noah Gallen are also wait and sees. And he also mentioned that Devin Bush, star Louisiana quarterback, highly recruited, has been dealing with a shoulder injury, and that has kept him off the field this season. But I want to go back to Devion Warren. With his absence, there's a couple guys that have been asked and tasked to step up. Here's what Sam Pittman had to say about who is going to step up in Devion's absence.
When you start asking that question, Darren was the first one that popped to my mind. You know, he's been in and out of some quarantines and some different things. It's probably hurt his development. We have Trey Knox, and Trey will step in there along with Morris, and those guys will do well, no doubt in my mind. But the young guys, certainly Darren would be the one that we would travel and move up into one of those 9 spots.
And the Darren he's referring to is Darren Turner, nicknamed Megatron, 4-star wide receiver out of Memphis, who apparently has had a little trouble picking up the playbook. But he's a guy that you're excited about, his potential under Justin Stepp and Kendall Briles in this offense. But Clay, we keep coming back to the same guy, and it's Trey Knox. And you hear him being mentioned again by Sam Pittman. And you had a tidbit that you mentioned a couple weeks ago that I have not seen on any Razorback website, heard it on any radio show, that Arkansas was the only school to offer Trey Knox a scholarship to play wide receiver, not linebacker.
Well, the only one of the top SEC programs. Mm-hmm. Tennessee thought he was a middle linebacker. Alabama thought he was a middle linebacker. Auburn did. And, you know, there were some other schools that I think, you know, Middle Tennessee, others that probably thought he was a wide receiver. But he was a difference maker as a defensive player and could play there. But he wants to play a wide receiver position. And he's got what you're looking for at that position, but he just hasn't been consistent. And he was hurt some last year, and, you know, he missed a couple of catches in the Auburn game, I think it was. One was a 2-point pass, another one was a slant, mm-hmm. and just kind of the slant. Now, I will say, Frank's put a little more mustard on it than maybe it needed to be, but it went right through his hands. And, you know, and you have to kind of put an asterisk by everything in that Auburn game because of the – you know, the rain, and it was really raining during those 2 plays. So but he's got to, when he gets out there, he's got to perform. And he hasn't, you know, there's just not, but you go back to last year, he was the leading receiver halfway through the year, and then kind of everything went to Burks, mm-hmm. you know, and he didn't get targeted much the second half of the season. And, you know, some of it you think, well, they're not looking to him. And then when you watch him, he's not open a lot. So when he gets his chance, he's got to take advantage of it, and he's got to get open. And he's a guy that in August made plays against their secondary, but it has not happened for him this year. And he's a great person, a great teammate. He's, you know, does all the right things. You know, he's one of the first guys there, last to leave, you know, all that kind of stuff. You just pull for him, you know, to get a break and then take advantage of it and then, you know, just kind of sail along in what could be a good career, but it hadn't happened to this point.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.